Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started.
Hey, everyone. Wanted to quickly let you know about the release of the audio version of my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, narrated by David A. Kanasser. If you want to support the show, you can buy it wherever audiobooks are sold. Links are also in the show notes. Also, I appreciate everyone who leaves a rating and review and listens to the podcast. It means a ton to me. So, thank you so much for listening. Now, on to my guest for today, Ugi Durich, founder of Content Horse. Ugi may only be 21, but he's already experienced failure as well as success in building a business. After trying to help market bars and restaurants in Belgrade, he found his niche in writing content for SaaS companies and then launched his own content marketing agency, Content Horse. His newest venture is Padino, which seeks to incorporate podcasting into their clients' content marketing strategy. Not surprisingly, soon Ugi will be launching his own podcast. Ugi shared some of his strategies that they use at Content Horse to produce good content that entices possible buyers to a site, stressing that it needs to be of high value and highly actionable. His team aims to set their content apart by doing their due diligence in researching what's out there, crowdsourcing experts, and remembering that in the end, it's people you're trying to reach, not some Google algorithm. He sees the promise of artificial intelligence in helping to do research, but believes that it's only people that can make great copy. Now, let's get better together. Ugi Durich, welcome to the podcast.
It's my pleasure to be here, Jerry.
Well, you know, it's my pleasure to talk with you because we met through a cold email. And if anyone has ever heard me rant and rave about good cold emails, they will know that I get a ton of them and I actually send out a ton of them because it's my job to outreach. Right. And I really loved your cold email. I think what's interesting is you also found me on matchmaker.fm. So there was like, you did the perfect kind of stalk, quote unquote, where you're like, oh yeah, there you are. Oh yeah. I'm going to introduce myself via cold email. I mean, cause I'm really easy to find. Obviously my email is pretty easy, that's just a beautiful thing, because a lot of people try to do cold emails. They fail at them miserably. Like I said, I get a day, 20 to 30 a day. And I maybe respond to one. So you made it down the filter. But before we talk about what you're doing at Content Horse, and Padino, like I always like to say, start out the question with, why don't you tell us how you got to do what you're doing today?
Yeah, definitely. So believe it or not, I'm like pretty young. I have 21 years. So I started my first startup in high school when I was 16. And that was like some local platform for finding the best bars and restaurants. And after a year or so, we haven't made any money there, and like we failed miserably. But after that, I continued my entrepreneurial journey as the freelancer. So I started doing digital marketing for restaurants, for bars in Belgrade, so on. Then a couple of years ago, I got a first client, a first SaaS client, so software as a service, who needed content writing services. And then I was like, wow, this guy is going to pay me $300 per month to write him like 6 or 7 articles. This is going to be dope. I had 17 years, 18 years at that time. And that's how I jumped into the content marketing and SaaS world. A couple of years after that, here I am having an agency, really like big agency in SaaS space, helping really great SaaS businesses to conquer content marketing and get results. And yeah, that's pretty much how I got here.
Wow. I didn't know that you were so young.
Yeah, I am actually.
Well,
I'm also expecting a baby right now.
Oh, so. Well, congratulations. That's going to age you too, right? You're going to be like no sleep and guts. Go great. Well, wonderful. Congratulations to you. That's awesome. And you know, it's really cool that you kind of found the passion for entrepreneurship early. A lot of times it sometimes comes to people later in life. And I think it really depends on kind of your attitude and where you're at and what you want to do. And I'm always fascinated by the people that start off something in high school and then sort of like, well, I think I'm good at this, which sounds like you were. Tell us a little bit about kind of, so you talked about content marketing, you talked about, you know, SEO and SaaS. And I know you run an agency called Content Horse. And as everyone knows, like I have an agency too. We do PR marketing communications. We also do content, but it's not exactly what you guys do. We work more on the storytelling and the framework and the strategy behind it all. So someone hires us to like tell you what to do. Like, oh, this is what we need to do, right? So tell us a little bit about, you know, Content Horse, how that works and what you're sort of seeing in terms of content generation and content trends.
Yeah, definitely. So essentially Content Horse is the all-inclusive content marketing agency for B2B SaaS companies. So we work mainly with B2B SaaS. We cover every aspect of content marketing. So literally from creating a content funnel, doing keyword research, overwriting high quality content, building backlinks towards content distribution and content conversion rate optimization. So we like cover pretty much everything, but because that allows us to be in charge of the entire process, and then we are sure that we can bring real results to our clients. So that's actually what Content Horse is. As I mentioned, we work with B2B SaaS companies. We helped Lemlist to go from 0 to 3 million in annual recurring revenue in less than a year, working with GetResponse, UserPilot, Vitals, helped also Chameleon and a real bunch of great SaaS companies. So yeah, that's pretty much what we do at Content Horse. Right now we are around 15 people. We have around 15 people in our team. Yeah, mainly content writers and outreach specialists. But we also have a couple of, we call them like head of growths. So those are the guys who are with me behind the strategies that we do for our clients. So yeah, that's pretty much it about Content Horse.
Cool. Yeah, I mean it does well. As we all know, content is king, right? Content is what generates long-term results. You can always sort of hack a short-term gain by doing digital ads. I mean, I have nothing against digital ads. It's just, I think it's literally a bad story tax. I keep on like trying to harp on that. And it takes time to build up good content. It takes time to have a really like solid strategy. The first step in that, like I always like to say, is like, okay, what's the story of this company? What's unique about it, et cetera. And I like the fact that, a lot more people are getting into, content's always been this way. And it sort of goes through these ebbs and flows. And it's like, oh, let's go hack Google Ads. And then it's like, oh, we need long tail SEO. And then they kind of have the schism. People go back and forth, like, how do I grow? And so, you know, as the way you see it for B2B SaaS, I mean, what are some of the most effective ways for a B2B SaaS company to grow their content? I mean, of course, other than hiring you, but like, are there any kind of nuggets? You know, I know you've only been around for 21 years, so you're actually probably pretty fresh at it. You're probably like, I don't need to worry about what Crazy Uncle Jari says. He's been doing it for I've been doing this as longer than you've been alive. So, any nuggets on that?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, there are like really a lot of different content strategies that B2B SaaS companies can do, like prepare SEO glossaries, write guest blog posts, do pillar cluster topics, whatever. So it doesn't matter what kind of strategy you choose. What matters is how you write your content, right? So we noticed that many, many companies, not just in the SaaS space, but in other industries as well, they're writing content for the sake of rankings, right? So they're writing content like the Google is actually their customer, right? They're writing content for the algorithm. They're not writing content for users and human beings, right? So I think that that's something that's really missing in a lot of articles out there. They lack that, we like to call it human element. They lack the human element, and they are also not optimized for users' intent, right? So they're optimized for keywords, but they are not optimized for users' intent. And that's the main problem right now with content. Another thing is that 98% of the content out there is pretty much the same, right? So if you want to get results from content marketing, you need to write content that's better than any other out there. You need to write content that shows the real value. And like you said, you need to write content that has golden nuggets inside, right? It needs to be evergreen. And the way we do it, so we actually, for example, if we write about best e-commerce user experience practices for e-commerce user experience, what we do, we actually go out there and we talk with like 10, 15 e-commerce experts, and we share their insights inside that article, right? Then we also make the content skimmable so that people can easily go through it, find what they need to find, and so on. And yeah, that's pretty much how people can write best content right today. So it needs to be super actionable. It needs to be super valuable. It shouldn't be fluffy. So for example, if the article is like best CRO strategies, many people just write as one strategy, make an eye-catchy call to action button, right? But like everyone knows that.
Right.
I mean, there's no point.
There's nothing unique about it, right?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, you need to be unique, you need to share value, and you need to write for humans.
Yeah, no, I spoke, have you heard of Winter? The testing platform for like landing pages?
I'm not sure.
So PEP, Pep Laya is the CEO. He's the one that did also CXL. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, I know about him.
Yeah, same person. And I interviewed him, and we were talking about, hey, you know, writing content and landing pages and stuff, and that, you know, the GPT-3, I think, is the whole AI generation of content, right? And what's funny is we were talking about this because a lot of people think they can shortcut the content generation piece. Oh, I'll just let the AI do it. And his point, which I wanted to ask you about, his point was, I think, aligned with your point. He's just like, well, you know what? AI and bots don't buy stuff. Humans buy stuff. So you need to know if a human will actually buy something from your copy. And I thought that's really spot on. And I know, like, you know, everyone wants to be able to write copy quicker, but to your point, which I don't think this, you know, I don't think AI is going to be able to do for a long time, is write that unique content that's not like everything else. Because GPT-3 is going to just generate whatever. I mean, it's going to generate the same thing. I mean, within reason, definitely. But you know what I mean? So do you see that trend where a lot of customers are like, oh, I'll just get the AI to do it? Or, I mean, do you use any of those tools to sort of like help out, or is it just like, no, man, we have our process and we don't use any tools like that?
Yeah, definitely. To be honest, like a week or two ago, I tried one AI tool. I gave it a go, but like I gave him a job to write like 20 or 30 articles. To be honest, like they're very, very bad. I mean, and that's
well, yeah, that's good. I'm good. Woo-hoo. We have a job still, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in the near future, like in the next 10, 20, 30 years, AI will never be able to replace us content writers, right? But I think that AI has one use case. And that use case is actually doing research for you, right? Oh, so I think that it will never be able to write compelling copy as we can, right? But you can use the AI, run different like searches, make him write different articles, and then use his content as a research, as an outline, right? And then you go on top of that and write great content, right? So I think that's one use case for the AI, but I also think that right now it's not good even for that.
Really? Right? Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, at least the tool I tried. I mean, the content in the game, it really didn't make any sense.
I mean, and you're a non-native English speaker. That's even better. Like, it didn't even make sense to me. And I should, you know, interesting. So you think it's more like So how do you guys, like, what tools do you use to research that sort of stuff? Because what I've found is really, really challenging to write original content that's compelling. The research is pretty, you have to do a really good job of it. And sometimes it's super hit and miss. Like I, you know, write something, think, oh, this is great. And it's like, oh no, it's not great. And then I write something else and it's like, how come that's so good and this isn't? So are there any like research tips that you would like to share?
Yeah, definitely. So first things first, we identify potential topics by taking a look at Ahrefs, right? And finding keywords.
Love Ahrefs.
Yeah, it's one really amazing tool. So we take a look at Ahrefs, we find potential topics there. Once we align on the topic, right, now we go into the research. First thing we do is we check 4, 5, or 6 articles that are already ranking first for that keyword. And we go on and see what makes them unique, and we try to understand what are they writing about, right? We write down our findings, and then we see what can we do to make our article even better, right? So then we try to find the gaps. Sometimes, like, you don't need to reinvent the wheel, right? You just need to make article UX of the article easier, right? And it's going to be an after rank for Google. Essentially, like, that's the first thing we do. We read our competitive articles. Then we go out to different communities, online communities. So we like to use Facebook a lot. There are a lot of great Facebook communities, especially in the SaaS, e-commerce, or sales space. And we go out there and we ask for feedback, right? We ask for quotes. We ask for their methods of solving some problems, right? So we try to find the gold inside these communities, and then we use that in our content. Third thing we do, we have our own Hero. So you heard about Help a Reporter out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hero. Yep. Yeah. I use it a lot.
We are using it as well, but we are also building our own version.
Oh.
Yeah. Really? So we actually have right now a community of almost 100 partners from the SaaS world, SaaS space, 100 experts. And every week, we are sending them one email outlining each article that we are writing this week. Right. And then we give them like a Google form. They can fill out the Google form and send us their submissions. Right. Wow. And that way we are also able to get really high quality content and golden nuggets out there from the real experts. So that's pretty much, in short, how we approach content research.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another company that does that. Oh, I don't remember the name of it. It's these roundup posts. Like, I think that's what you're talking about, where it's like, oh, and they send me an email like every week and they're like, here are the 10 things we're working on. What are you, if you're a quote unquote expert, like click on one and then you fill it out. And then they, you know, give you an attribution, right? They give you a link back or whatever, which is really cool. And Haro is a great resource. It is super cumbersome though to work with, because if anyone, and actually highly recommend everyone listening to actually subscribe to Haro, because it's a good way to get free publicity. If you contribute, you have to keep at it. But what's cool about Haro, the good and the bad, you know, they give you 3 emails a day and it's literally an email just chocked full of stuff. I don't think the UI on that's changed in probably since he started it. And that's probably a couple of decades ago, it seems.
I mean, on top of that, Hero was also acquired.
Yes, by Cision.
The new company, like, literally did nothing.
Oh, yeah. No. So in the PR world, there's Cision. Cision is this massive database back in the day. I mean, it probably started in the 70s and 80s, maybe even longer. Their interface is horrible, like just absolutely horrible. And it's so expensive. And if you're a PR pro, you either use Cision or you use something called Muckrack. Muckrack's like the next level of Cision. It's a little better. It's still expensive because of what it is. I mean, it's interesting because there's lots of companies trying to solve this problem. And I've always been just frustrated with, why is this so expensive? Like, it's a SaaS play. Like, how come I have to pay, you know, 10x what I would normally pay a SaaS company? Like, your data's okay. It's not worth 10x, right? And it's frustrating. So, yeah, if you could find a way to build like a Muckrack or a Cision in a Haro that's 10x less expensive and has the same quality, you'll get more people than just PR pros using it. I think that's the thing these PR folks miss. They always go after the big, massive companies that are like, oh, hey, you know, you're IBM, and of course you're going to buy the latest and greatest because you got this massive budget. But if you're like a startup or a small business, like the bottom of the pyramid, no one's going to pay $300 a month or $250 a month for this. Like, they can't afford it. But they would pay 25.
And then
the scale, it just scales massively. And then it's like, well, then what's your advantage? In full disclosure, I have been a subscriber of Cision and of Muckrack. I actually love Muckrack a lot more, but it's just too expensive.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like you just said, Jason Lemkin from Sastra had some really great tweet, like 2 weeks ago when he explained how in every 10 billion market, there is like space for at least 3 1 billion plus unicorns, right? So it's the same like you just said in the PR space. I mean, there is space for new unicorns everywhere. We just need to find them.
Well, and yeah, and it's just so fascinating because, I mean, the way Muckrack does it is they pull Twitter feed, right? Twitter actually did a genius thing, right? They're like, here's our pipe. Go for it. Build stuff. And you're like, oh, wow, this is really cool. And pretty much every reporter on the planet's on Twitter. It's like the place. They don't go to anywhere else. It's just Twitter.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so they can, you know, they actually have a pretty good way to kind of see reach and everything. And it's all nebulous, this whole PR, you know, reach and, you know, earned media is such a joke. Like, who knows, man? You know, everyone, can you justify your PR spend? And I'm all, okay, well, we can go earned media, I guess, you know? And, I mean, same, probably the same thing with you. I mean, at least with content, which is beautiful. And the reason why like Ahrefs and even all the analytics tools, you know, good content because good content ranks high. And you're like, hey, that's on the top page. It's got this many clicks. It's got this many things, you know, organic and both paid, right? So the metric's pretty solid. Like you can, now, whether or not it goes to buy is clearly the thing you got to worry about. And one of the things that I'm working on is this thing called, this concept called the story funnel, which is all about how to map this whole thing out, the entire ecosystem from prospects to customers to advocates. Because what I found, and I'd like to ask you this as well, what I found is people are always really good at the north of buy. My friend Ravi and my co-creator of Story Funnel, he's like, yeah, north of buy, everyone has digital ads, content, all that's great. But then south of buy, onboarding, advocacy, and all that kind of falls off the cliff. So in your practice, do you mostly focus on like getting people to buy, or what are some of the metrics that your customers use to judge you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that pretty much depends from a client to client, right? Our main, let's call it like unique selling point is that we help SaaS companies to go up to more than like $5 million in annual recurring revenue. And that's actually what we do. But on the other hand, we have other clients, such as, for example, GetResponse, who already has like 60 million in annual recurring revenue or more. I don't know the exact numbers, but like they have 400 employees out there, right? And there are like different metrics for them. We also recently, we are right now in the pipeline. We have one really great client. We will soon, I think, close the deal with them. And they already have a lot of revenue, right? But they want to position themselves as the other type of the tool, right? So it's really different. And usually they evaluate us by the trials or signups they get. They can't evaluate our services based on the new paying customers, right? Because what happens after they start a free trial, that's not up to us, right? I mean, there is like your user onboarding flow, customer success team, product-led growth, whatever. We are there to make them try you, right? To schedule a demo or whatever, but we are not responsible for actually converting them from trial customers to paying customers, right? Usually we like to evaluate ourselves by the money we bring, right? So the trial customers. And for me, that's the only and the best metric for content marketing. It doesn't matter if I have like 100K organic search or 10K. You know, it's not relevant. What's relevant at the end of the day is how much signups you get from content.
Yeah, exactly. No, the total, like, yeah, how do you get them? How do you get that interaction to the next level? How do you get them to take action? How do you get them to say, here's my email? I mean, I think email is probably one of the best currencies for this sort of thing. Because every time you have to sign up for something, you clearly have to give them your email so they can set your account up. And then once you get them in the email pipe, then you're right. That's sort of, then you got to get them to buy. And then once you get them to buy, I think a lot of people fall off the cliff really quick when it comes to building out that whole onboarding and being productive and then being a fan and an advocate. Like that, I think a lot of people need to work on. And what's interesting is that that advocacy point, if you work all the way back, does impact your north of buy content. It does impact what you do, because those people that are actually like, I love what you do, are the best people to be
definitely.
I mean, when you tell your buddy, hey, man, like Ahrefs, right? I tell everyone I know about Ahrefs. I'm like, you got to use this. This is the greatest tool ever. Same with Canva. Love Canva. Just absolutely could not live without Canva. If Canva went away, I would fly to Australia and be like, you guys can't, you guys can't quit, right? Same with Xero for accounting. I mean, there are these great, great tools, SaaS tools that have built such a strong advocacy because they have great products and services. But if you look at the content for Ahrefs, Canva, Xero, I don't do it much for Xero because I'm not like a power user of it, but for Canva and Ahrefs, their content is stellar. Like there is no doubt that you use that tool and you do what they say. I mean, I've done a lot of like the Ahrefs, some of the tutorials to refresh content. This stuff works. I'm like, wow, it works. Like, yeah, I can't believe it. Definitely. You know, I did the work, right? And so, go ahead.
Yeah, so we actually have a content term that we use for our clients and potential clients when they ask us, like, what kind of content do you write? We tell them we write HF style content.
It's now an adjective. I love it. That's true. I mean, they nail it. I mean, it's sort of like if you're a personal trainer. I laugh at this, and it's true, and it's a little bit controversial. But like, I have a bunch of friends that are personal trainers, and they're like, my biggest advertisement is what I look like, because that's what my clients want. They're like, you've got your stuff together. You look the way I want to look, right? And there are lots of, that's missed a lot. And it's interesting because you're right. If I was to say, what's the type of content that like I write? Yeah, I think it would be Ahrefs style, maybe a little bit of Canva style. I'm a real big fan. I used to be a big fan of HubSpot. I'm not so much a big fan of HubSpot anymore. Just it's a long story, but you know, it's this, you know, even like Stephen Pressfield type, you know, Seth Godin type of content where, you know, or Brian Clark, like, I don't know if he's the godfather of copywriting, but copy blogger is, so he's like, there's a half a dozen folks that are like, you're the guys, right? So, or the gals that like started all this, Simone, I don't remember her last name, but I think her last name was Simone. But anyway, like this whole groundswell, it is good to say, oh, that's my style. And I think it's just like when you're an author, when people ask, well, so what are your books like? Okay, yeah, you know, you may feel a little offended by that. But all of us have stylistic things that we've taken from other. There's no doubt every single one of us, you know, if we're artists, we steal like a lot. And it's stealing is not in the sense that we nefarious about it, but the people who influence us are pretty big. And so like, what are some of the influences on you? I mean, you know, you've been around 21 years, you're in Serbia, English is a second language, you're writing content, clearly doing it really well. What are some of those inspirations that you find and your team finds?
Yeah. So, I mean, we are, to be honest, we are inspired by a lot of people. Right. So when it comes to content, like we said, Brian Clark, Ahrefs, we also like what Pplayer and the rest of the CXL team does. So it's really, really amazing work. myself, I personally, I really like, there are like three entrepreneurs that I really admire. One is Dave Gerhardt, CMO at Privy. His community is really, really great. I think that there is no better community for B2B marketing than his. His community is called DGMG. I think that it's that way now. And the other two guys that influenced me a lot are Dan Martell. I think he's a very, very experienced guy in SaaS. And I really like what Ryan Culp does. So he's a guy who bought one Shopify app, rebranded it, and then grew it to the skies. And he's a really great guy as well. And I like him because it's something that's similar that we do at Content Horse. So we are not just the content marketing agency. We are also business starters, right? So we like to launch new products or new agencies every quarter or so to test them, to grow them fast. And that's what we actually do besides offering content marketing services. So yeah, those are people that influence me personally the most and the other team members as well.
Have you heard of the Hustle newsletter?
Yeah, I've heard of Hustle newsletter. Haven't been following them for a lot of time, but I heard that they got acquired by HubSpot, I think.
They did. Yeah. I was a minor investor. So I got a little return. I know Sam. I used to take some of my professional athletes to go visit him when they were in town, say, this is what a startup's like, because he's just such a creative guy. He's got a community called Trends, which I would hide. If you're not in it, it's so worth it. You were talking about communities where you can see where things work. The Trends community is just this mat. I mean, it's actually growing too fast, I think, personally. It's just so much. It's overwhelming. But there's B2B, B2C, direct-to-consumer, all these business folk. And they're the Trends, I think they do it every 2 weeks, email, the summary email. It's so filled with trends and signals and flares and business ideas and what people are doing. It's just this, it's amazing. And I think that's the reason why they got bought, to be honest, because I think one of the things that everyone wants, especially B2B companies, well, I think most companies want this, right? You want this intimate connection with the customer, because if someone buys from you, right, once, chances are they'll buy from you again if they really like what you're doing. And again, I think that's that south of buy thing that I don't know why people don't focus more on that. I mean, there is a company called Zuberance. I think it's Zuberance. This guy named Rob runs it. And I think it's Rob. Which they work on advocacy, right? And I'm just curious if you think that, as people start to good content matters. No, robots aren't going to write our content anytime soon. Great. Whew, I have a job. You have a job. We all have jobs. Right? Yeah. But I got to believe that there's going to be a point where the content, there's the north of buy content where we're trying to grab people like prospects. Hey, come try. Do you guys also write the, you said you don't the content that's south of buy, helping cut your now customers be successful. Do you see that as a big growth opportunity or something you're looking at? Or is it just something we don't do that. We're just sort of in our own thing.
Yeah. So right now we are not doing that as a service, right? In some cases we do, if it's some really, really special deal. But it's not in our regular service offering. But when it comes to that, I think that you call it how do you call it? South?
South of buy.
South of buy, yeah. So I think that south of buy is equally important as a north of buy, right? So you can get someone to sign up for your product, but it's not a guarantee that they are going to pay you, right? You need to take care of their onboarding. You need to, there are like a lot of product-led growth strategies that you can use that can literally skyrocket your business. You need to take care of your community, right? So back in the days when I was working for Lemlist, Lemlist is one amazing cold email outreach tool. It's like a Mailshake alternative. And they have probably the most powerful cold email and sales community out there, right? So they have, it's called on Facebook, it's called Lemlist Family. And the level of engagement inside, it's amazing, right? So, and that community, after I leaved them, so I leaved them when they were around 3 million in annual recurring revenue. Right now, a year after that, I think they are around 6 or 7 million in annual recurring revenue. So pretty, it's like over 100% year-over-year growth rate. And that community was one of the main drivers of growth for them. So it's a community with around 15,000 people, not wow. more.
Wow.
So it's like a pretty small community, 15,000 people, but it's really amazing. And people inside are super engaged with Lemlist and the team, the entire team. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's out of the buy is equally important.
Yeah. The trends community, I mean, it must be that big now. When I first started with it, so it's interesting. So like I have a rule, like anything Sam says, like, hey, I'm doing this thing. Are you in? I'm like, just in, click. Like I just, cause you never know, like it could go belly up or whatever, but you know, I'm always like, oh, he's got something cooking. That's interesting. So I think I got into the trends community when they first did it. And there was less than 1,000 people in it at that point. It's a Facebook, private Facebook group. I think it's got to be north of 10,000 now. It's just amazing. And so,
yeah, definitely.
So you also have this thing, new thing, switching topics called Podino. Is that what it's called? Podino?
Yeah. Podino. Yeah.
Podino. And that's all about podcasting. And, what's interesting about podcasting and content marketing, I don't know if you've found this, but a lot of times with a podcast interview, like what we're doing right now, you know, we can let the conversation breathe. We can find the nuggets. We can pull out certain things, you know, much different than actual written content. Although in order for you to actually find this podcast, I have to write some content so that you'll be like, oh, I want to hear what you have to say, right? So how did Podino come about, and how is podcasting sort of going into your guys' content strategy?
Yeah, definitely. So, like I mentioned earlier, we like to launch new things, right? And, the most recent one is actually Podino. So that's a productized service where we help other clients, other businesses, personas to get featured to speak on the best podcasts in their niche, right? And we schedule them podcasts that are literally in the top 1% in the world. So we go that far. And it's the latest thing that we launched. We are aiming to make it as automatic as possible, right? So we like have the processes in place from the day one. We have a process for acquiring customers, process for getting podcasts, so everything can run smoothly. And that's the newest product. What was your second question?
How does that fit into all this content marketing?
So essentially, the idea for Podino was born after I was speaking with a couple of Content Horse clients, right? And they mentioned that they would like to appear on podcasts. And for me, that was a clear signal, like, wow, this can like boost our revenue very much. And after we launched Podino, we improved our content horse revenue for like more than 20%, right? So it was a really, really huge and really great, let's call it like a growth hack, but although I don't love that term very much.
Well, that's because they don't, so a hack, right? A growth hack will eventually be arbitraged to zero because once people figure it out, they then exploit it and then it goes away. That's same with ad, any kind of ad hack, any kind of, you know, growth stuff. The only thing I think you'll agree with this, the only thing that really works in the long term is good quality content based on a great story and good products, right? That stands the test of time. So I'm sorry.
Definitely. So that's how we got an idea for Podino. After that, we launched the agency to the other people as well who are not Content Horse clients. And right now, before we launched Podino, we haven't quite had podcasting game in the plan, right? So we were, as the agency itself, we don't pretty much do sales for ourselves, right? So Content Horse, the main client acquisition channel for Content Horse is the word of mouth and the referrals, right? And totally. I think that's the best way to grow agency. It's a slow one, and it's the unpredictable way to grow the agency, but the leads that come through word of mouth are the best leads ever, right?
Well, I think that's true for any business, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole like idea of the South of Buy stuff, right? If you are doing such a great job with your customers, it is only natural that they'll be like, hey, you got to go check out Content Horse. It's awesome. Or, hey, you got to go, you know, be on the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. It was such a great experience, man. We just talked about such cool stuff. And, you know, and that I think is the goal, honestly, of good content and a good, what I call story funnel process, because it doesn't matter if you're an agency, a car dealer, a bakery, a SaaS product, direct to consumer. That I think is the ultimate game.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So back to the question right now, as we started doing podcasting PR, we call it like podcasting PR for other clients. We also started doing it for ourselves. Right. So right now, I was a guest on a lot of podcasts, but it's not like the strategy. It was not the plan. You know, I was like, someone asked me, hey, do you want to talk here? Do you want to speak about this and that? And I say, yeah, why not? But right now we are also scheduling podcasts for ourselves because that's the best use case, right? We are telling everyone that our clients are getting results from podcasts. You know, it would be the best if you tell that we also get results through podcasts.
Yeah, you gotta you gotta eat your own dog food, right?
Yeah, definitely. So that's how we
love it.
Started like doing podcasting for ourselves. We are also soon launching our own podcast.
Wow, great!
Yep, and it's gonna be a really, really amazing one, funny one. We are gonna give challenge to ourselves. And then we are going to document the story, but I don't want to reveal too much right now. I'm just teasing.
Good. That's a really good cliffhanger, right? I love it. No, yeah, I mean, definitely. It's great, you know, and like I said before at the top of what we were talking about, I mean, your cold email to me was really well done. Very thoughtful. It piqued my interest. That's the reason why you're on the show. You know, some would say, well, we're kind of quote unquote competitors in this landscape, but I mean, the pie is so big for what we do. The cooler people I talk to about all the stuff going on is just, it's so much better for everyone, right? Because the pie is always going to expand. There's always going to be a need for great content writers. And I think now what I'm trying to focus on is, okay, how do you get that great content? And then how do you get that great content south of Buy, right? Like, let's start developing more advocates. And looking forward to hearing your podcast. Looking forward to, you know, how everything goes, and really appreciate your time. This has just been really insightful. So thank you for this.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jerry, as well.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.